From Studio Live in Cumberland, BC, you're listening to the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm Chef Jonathan Fraser.
And I'm Darren Howlett. And thanks again for joining us as we go on our little culinary tour of Vancouver Island and beyond. And yeah, we got another treat episode. We've got Mr. Blaine Prowse coming into the studio today, John.
He's come back to talk to us, and we're going to talk to him about foraging and feeding in the winter.
Yeah.
About what to be doing in January with the snow on the ground.
Right. Yeah, I mean, when we were talking about this, we didn't really have that much in mind. It sort of just happened. We were like, hey, we can talk to Blaine. Blaine would know about this kind of stuff. And,
yeah.
It just sort of came about. So and we're going to put him on the spot.
Put him on the spot, and we'll just see what rolls out, because we haven't had him in the studio for a while. but we should talk a little bit about our last episode.
Yeah,
that was a great episode. We had Jeff in here from the president of the Comox Valley Food Bank.
Yeah, it was a great episode, and definitely gave some directions on, you know, where people can help out, because I think it's definitely something that, I'm still trying to figure out exactly how I'm going to help out, but I've got a couple of ideas in mind now that I've had some time to germinate and think about it.
You got that feeling that you want to get involved and
help
out and give back to the community and people that are in emergency and give them some food.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't go into it there, but there was a time in my life, very brief period of time, but there was 2 months there in my life when I was a young guy, and I was in between every situation you can imagine. I was neither here nor there, and I didn't live anywhere. I didn't whatever. And I mean, it's not a sob story. I'm sure everybody in their early 20s goes through that period of, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. And, but I didn't have food for 2 months, and I just sort of made it work with all the connections I had. But, you know, it makes you sit back and think about, I would have definitely used a facility like that, I think, at least once or twice. And even though I didn't, I would still like to be able to take people out of that predicament that I was in, you know?
And I thought it was nice that he brought up the fact that there's only so much food to go around for each person. This was after we were talking to him a little bit after the episode.
Right.
And he's saying, you know, we always split equally amongst everyone baskets and stuff like that. But a lot of times people don't even know what to do with some of the food that's given to them there.
Right.
They're sort of like... And it's also when they go into a grocery store, they see foods there that they might buy, but they're
right.
Like, I don't want to waste my money on something that I might not like. So I'm a little scared. Whereas it gets,
I think,
donated.
Some of his examples specifically, he had said like an avocado or I think he said a dragon fruit or an eggplant or whatever. He said, these are foods that the food bank often has the availability to take. But if they take them in, nobody's taking them because they don't know what those things are. So he sort of approached us after the show and said, you know, maybe we can work on something there where we can show people how to use these more, you know, some of these ingredients that they're just not familiar with. And so that when the food bank does get the offer to take a pallet of avocados, they're going to jump at the chance to take them because they know that their people are going to come and grab them. So, I definitely, there's some way that we can help out there. I'm sure of it. And we got to figure that out.
Yeah. We definitely, we should know the people, and some of our past guests can probably help out with
I'm sure.
I imagine Blaine's got a couple of great ideas.
I don't know what to do with dragon fruit either.
Speaking of which, welcome back, Blaine. I always feel weird welcoming you because I still feel like this is your thing.
No, it's not my thing anymore. I'm so far removed, but it's fun to come and hang out with you guys.
Well, if anybody that's listening is not aware, Blaine was the original. It was originally Blaine and John that started.
Was Blaine that phoned me up out of the blue and was like,
"Right,
dude, we got to hang out more." And I'm like, "Yeah, well, you know, I work." And he's like, "Well, what if we did a podcast?" I'm like, "What's a podcast?" He's like, "No, it's just they're really cool."
Yeah, me and my bright ideas.
But you've, you know, I now look at you as, I mean, aside from some of the great interviews and the great talks and the great food discussions that you did in a lot of those earlier episodes, you know, I always look to you now as somebody that went that step further in food. You sort of like, this is my niche with food and I'm going to go follow that. And I've always absolutely respected it. To me, it's on par with like my brother who, you know, he's just like, I know exactly where I am and I know exactly what I want out of food and I'm going to follow that and be, you know, make that my thing. And, but, you know, when John and I were talking, we were talking about not really necessarily a topic or anything. We were just started talking about like, what do people do in the winter, you know, for foraging, and what do people, like the food foragers out there or the food gatherers out there, what do they do in the winter? We talked about how, you know, it's generally seen as a time of year that you're supposed to dip into your stores. That's the whole point of your harvest, and you store food. So.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, there are those people out there that they, I mean, maybe I'm not necessarily saying that this is with that gravitas, like that people have to go out and food forage, but those people that enjoy it, maybe what kind of things can they be looking for? Or is this, you feel comfortable answering that question? Is this within your realm?
Yeah, I've been thinking about it a little bit since you sort of mentioned it when I got here. Definitely shellfish, oysters and clams, they're there.
Right.
This is the prime season for it. I know.
I can't remember. What is it?
Any month that has an R in it.
That's right.
Don't eat the oysters.
Right.
So that's when they get spawny.
Oh, right. You almost got that backwards, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I would carry that a little further and May, no. Don't eat oysters don't eat in May. Well, I mean, if you're buying them from a farm, it's fine. But if you're going out at low tide in May and the sun's been on them all day,
right?
Not optimal.
No.
As soon as they get milky, right?
They get milky and the flesh gets warm and you start getting Vibrio issues. And, you know, there could be some weird algae blooms and maybe not red tide, but still, I don't know. I don't have a problem eating shellfish that time of year, but I would buy it then. I wouldn't probably forage it myself. Not locally anyway, you know, maybe up north where the water's colder.
Right. Yeah.
But I love going around Christmas time, New Year's.
Yeah.
Russ and I, every year we make a plan to go to this beach where we pick oysters and we meet down there at 10 o'clock at night, and it's always -5 to -10. Oh, and we go down there and we eat a few raw on the beach and we bring some home to share with our family. And we just sit out there and chit chat. And it is, you know, it's just something that we've done for years and it's fantastic. It's a great experience.
Oysters in the moonlight, right?
It's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah, like this year we went down there and Russ forgot his headlamp. So we're trying to, he's trying to shuck his oysters by my headlamp and almost picking with his fingers without his eyes because he can't really see. And
oh my God.
And yeah, it was that cold then.
Those adventures, yeah.
It was, it was one of those -12 nights we had.
My God.
So yeah, we were shivering.
There was a cold night.
Yeah, it was so cold.
But that's the best time for oysters. Like,
oh yeah, they're absolutely the best.
I'm like, anyone who puts oyster on salt, I'm like, just go home.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is why we have ice.
Yeah.
Cool it down.
Keep
and just
them really cold.
Keep them ice cold, and they're just that much better, right?
Like, oh, it's the best, and that's, to me, like, the right after Christmas, like, let's go to the beach and get some oysters and have a little feed and kind of help bring in the new year that way. Or
Let's go way back to when you and me used to cook together.
Yep.
Back at the Kingfisher days.
Yep.
Wow. And I'm just laughing because remember we used to do the Schnitzel Madness, and it was twice a year. And then they decided that like this was such a big success that we should have other madnesses and crazy months with specializing in just dishes, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then Blaine was the one that was like, we should do oysters into January.
Yeah.
And the chef just looked at us and went, power to you, boys, do it.
Yeah.
We're like, what?
Write the menu.
He's like, write the menu. Here you go. So then, So then the two of us are stuck barely knowing what we're doing. And we're just writing oyster casino, oyster Florentine.
Right.
I'm like, what other ways can you do? Breaded oysters.
It sounds like the Gourmet by the Sea menu from when I used to work at Gourmet by the Sea.
Yeah, I think we stole half the
I think so.
We always had Louisiana fried oysters. We always had oysters casino. We always had oysters Florentine.
Yeah, I don't think we actually
oysters
did
Rockefeller.
Raw oysters back then. I think we were too chicken to do that on a restaurant.
Well, we were just buying quarts and using shucked quarts, right?
Right.
So, but we had clams and mussels, I think, too, probably.
Yeah, I think we did a few other little
But there was no crab. It was
pretty.
You hadn't even been to your first year apprenticeship school. I was barely out of the dish pit, and here we are building this menu. And that, remember that?
That was back, though, Kingfisher was a little more, like, loose and carefree. Like, they were a little more relaxed
back
then. Way
different back then, yeah.
Yeah.
This I remember 96, 97.
Yeah.
I used to do a thing back when I was at the old house, and I used to do this thing, and it ended up falling on our shoulders, me and my girlfriend. And for a couple of years, we put it on. It was called Hospitality Olympics. Do you
remember hearing of those? I never participated.
Because I remember the Kingfisher, they would
I participated, but I don't remember much about it.
Do you know our old host team? I remember Chef Ronald, who's now at Locals. I remember him coming out and watching the team, because it's about 10 o'clock in the parking lot of whoever won the last year. That's who has to host it. And you get everybody from the front of house and back of house, and they start drinking at 10 o'clock, just a casual drink while they're playing some competitions, you know, like.
Wait, we weren't supposed to start drinking until 10?
I'm just saying, I remember Ronald coming out and saying, no more, never again. Right. Never again.
Like, okay. It was that ugly, huh?
So
they don't do those anymore.
Yeah.
Which is probably good.
Anyways, I'm just saying, I remember back in the day. Sorry, I took it way off into whatever, but yeah, the Kingfisher used to be, I ended up working at the Kingfisher later on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I realized that it was very, very, they're now a world-class resort and they need to act accordingly.
Yeah.
But this was before those days. This was back when.
This is when it was just a motel and a restaurant.
Two cowboys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who couldn't ride a horse. I don't know.
I remember the one time we were cooking and it was kind of basically right at the end of the shift, and it was the last table we were serving, and we were scrambling because we were running out of product, and we got the plates out, and then we had the people, they were so thrilled with their meal that they called out, they wanted to meet the cooks or the chefs or whatever. So John and I go out there, these pimply faced 19-year-olds, and they're just like, oh, that was the best. Da, da, da. They said, you know, what's right. your background training? We're like, we're basically dishwashers.
Oh my God.
That was the first time I've ever been to a table. Yeah. It was probably yours too. Yeah. We're both like really embarrassed.
Scrambling to get clean jackets on. And
yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So
yeah, that was a comical night for sure. I think we laughed about that for a while.
I think we still laugh about that.
We still do. Yeah, obviously we are.
So January is definitely oyster time.
Yeah.
Right. Clams are great too.
Yeah. So going ahead into February, I mean, right now we're in a deep freeze. This is middle of January as we're talking.
Right.
So the deep freeze is starting to break now. So the snow will start to thaw. And in Cumberland, we're kind of a couple weeks behind the rest of the valley because we're a bit higher elevation.
Right, a little bit higher.
So, but probably by the end of February, you'll start to see some chickweed appearing.
Mm-hmm.
The nettles will be in March. They could start, it kind of depends on the temperature.
Right.
But they generally are starting around sometime in March. But around the 1st of April, they're always up.
Right.
And some of the other greens, they come up early. Dandelion greens start to perk up, you know, kind of anytime it starts to warm a bit. Some of those other herbaceous plants.
Interesting. Yeah. So there's not a heck of a lot at this particular... But nobody really expects there to be, I guess.
Yeah. But also for the gardeners, you know, hardy greens, again, because of the deep freeze, they're not really around. But I know probably in a couple of weeks, once the snow's gone, my kale will perk right up and my parsley and that kind of stuff will start coming back.
Right. Interesting.
Starting to get a few of those. It's nice that the kale always seems to be that one that sort of sneaks through everything. And
It just wilts right down. And then all of a sudden, as soon as the temperature comes above zero, it just, hey, I'm back. Hello. You go out there and pick it. And it's, I mean, I've picked it when it's been frozen.
Yeah.
Bring it in and cook it and it's just fine.
Yeah. It's a hardy vegetable, right?
Sure, like
it's designed to take that. That's why it's been around for how many years?
Yeah.
Thousands of years. So.
Right.
Yeah. But now, you know, if you're following sort of a traditional diet, this is the time of year of eating from your food that you put away in the fall.
Right, your food storage, your pantry and your...
Yep. Yeah, so your pantry and, you know, there's always meat around too. The farmers have meat available. So that's not foraging per se, but it kind of is because you're not being... you're still sort of being a hunter-gatherer without actually doing the hunting, but you're doing the gathering.
Yeah, the gathering end of it.
Yeah. Yeah, so... Right. So you can, you know, you always hit up some of the meat producers at the market.
Right.
Or Danny and Ryan at DKT Ranch.
Oh, yeah.
They got great. Chest freezers full of meat. Mm-hmm. So
I know I've got a bunch of chickens in my deep freeze.
Yeah.
That I got from one of my cooks that he got off his farm there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, we're slowly picking away at those. So anything good in your pantry that you've been hit up that was a bit of a surprise for you, or... Has it pretty much been that standard?
It's pretty standard. Nothing. Well, this year was probably the worst year I've ever had in as far as wild protein harvesting myself. My hunting season was meh, and my fishing was meh. So
really?
So we haven't had any wild game or wild fish to eat.
Wait, is that, you just, have a newborn, that's why.
Yeah, the little kid takes a bit of time up.
I was going to say, is that a lack of luck or is that indicative of something else?
Well, I just didn't get a lot of time to go hunting this year.
Right.
And fishing, again, not a lot of time out, but our normal spot that we go to in August, just there was no fish around for us to get. So
Wow. We
came home empty-handed and, just empty deer hunting. Went to Haida Gwaii for a couple weeks and deer hunted up there and didn't hunt hard, but we hunted a few days and didn't have any luck. So
Wow. Just
one of those years.
We had
a run-in with a black bear really close, and my hunting partner up there, he's from South Africa. He grew up with wildebeest and lions and all these crazy plains game.
Right.
Scared the heck out of him, this black bear.
Wow.
So it was a pretty funny experience to
kind of,
I taught him what to do because he's never really been in that close to a black bear either. So,
Right. You
know, we were about 20 yards from it walking up a road and it was walking the other way and we kind of, oh, hey.
Yeah.
You know, great big boar. And
so you didn't do the one that you just had to run faster than you? Is that right?
No. He had to run faster than me. I know it because he was scared. He was like, to his bear spray, and then he put his bear spray down, knocked an arrow. Then he dropped the arrow, grabbed the bear spray again. He was just back and forth. He didn't know what to do. And
right,
I just walked out and started taking pictures of it with my phone. And then, I want to carry on. So I clapped my hands and yelled at it, hey, bear, come on, let's go. Let's go. Clap my hands. And it just rolled off the path and we just kept going. And
you know, right,
wasn't worried, but he was very thankful that I he could, sort of taught him what to do. With
right.
It was comical.
Yeah, that's actually very funny.
Yeah.
So what else is there around? I think, you know, that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really it's meat season.
It is.
It's those fatty meats and sort of bulk up a little bit.
Storage root crops that you have left or purchased from the fall, you know.
Yeah.
Put up potatoes.
Well, I got to admit, I had a good year canning this year.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So that helped out. I'm going to brag about something here.
Yeah,
so,
go ahead.
But I made a green tomato and corn salsa.
Nice.
All from local stuff around here. It's like out of my parents' garden. They had all these green tomatoes that didn't ripen in time. So I just chipped them all up. Oh, it's fabulous.
That's awesome. What I did. I made...
not spicy, but it's nice.
I turned all the green tomatoes into chutney. I do this green tomato chutney. Oh my God.
Oh, nice.
I just absolutely love it. But that's my go-to for green tomatoes. If I ever have an abundance of them, I'm making a batch of chutney.
Actually, one thing that's really cool in my pantry this year, I just thought of.
Mm.
Nothing special, nothing fantastic, but I have canned peaches from a peach tree that I planted in my yard.
Oh, yeah.
That this year that produced piles of peaches. It was enough that we actually were able to
cancel.
Do maybe two cases of pint jars. So
nice.
That was really cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
We actually, just yesterday, my daughter and I mean, nothing new, nothing exciting, really. Didn't do much canning myself this year. But we went through our storage, like all the storage, and just sort of reassessed what we had. And just same thing. She was just like, oh, my God, I don't remember you doing this. And I was like, sometimes I can when you go to bed.
Sorry. Yeah.
It's an addiction. And but yes, you found a whole bunch of things. So just a lot of the things in the back row came to the front row. So yeah, in the next few weeks, I'm sure there'll be some new things that we'll be trying. Definitely. She was really excited about the, I did pears with Earl Grey, cardamom and cinnamon. And so she was like, I got to try that.
I'm
like,
I'm disappointed that I lost my cherries.
Oh yeah, I know.
We did some.
Those cherries were amazing. When
you've got to eat them. I haven't had any of my cherries. I pitted all these cherries and then I did them in brandy. It was brandy. And then we jarred them all. And then Kirsten decided that maraschino cherries were not to be used at the Atlas.
Oh, my God.
And she'd rather donate all her cherries than use those. And I was like, but those were mine.
Yeah.
Oops.
Yeah. So if you've had a cherry at the Atlas Cafe and a cocktail, those were mine.
Yeah.
And you're welcome.
You're welcome. Yes. No, you're not. No.
It's just comfort food time and, you know, lean out that pantry for getting into. I mean, the other thing is all your stuff you have stored, don't gobble it all down because we're still lots of months. It seems like spring's just around the corner, and it is, but the real food doesn't come for Right. Until at least probably end of June before there's really much happening. So.
Right. Yeah.
And you don't want to get sick of kale.
No. That's it. Dandelion greens and stinging nettles. They're all good, but they're not real food. Like, they're something to add, but they're not something you can live on unless you had to.
This year, I think one of the challenges, I think it was even Arzina that put that buzz in the air a couple of years ago, or maybe it was just we were talking to her about it, but talking about doing dandelion pesto.
Right.
I'm going to give that a go. Haven't done that before.
That's been to mind. I think I've talked to Blaine about this a dozen times. Dandelion pesto. That's the best thing in the world.
Dandelion pesto for sure. I think dandelions are, well, we talked about this. We did a whole, half an episode on it once where we talked about all the great things you can do with dandelions.
I find they're tricky because in one sense I get to that point that I'm like, I'm just eating my lawn. You know, you got that, like, if you've ever had your face run into a soccer field or something like that, you know that smell of,
I don't know. Did I give you any of that dandelion jelly that I did?
Yes, I did have a little bit of that.
See, to me, it did have a little bit of a lawn quality, if that's what you want to call it.
Yeah.
But it also, to me, it tasted like a really, like a natural, almost like honey. To me, I got a honey off it. I got that sort of whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's
a balancing act, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Excited to use things that are found around the town.
Another thing that's potentially around is seaweeds too. There's some seaweeds that a lot of it dies in the winter, just like any other plant, but you know, there's still some probably around. So that's also, I mean, all seaweeds are edible. I'm not an expert, but I do know that all seaweeds are edible and there's some around. So,
And it's an underused product. I think a lot of people, everywhere. It's like, they don't quite know what to do with it.
And I don't know. I foresee that changing too over the next 20, 25 years.
It's just an education thing. So it's just like mushroom picking, right? Everybody is into mushroom picking the last few years.
Yeah.
And so maybe that seaweed will be the next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've been wanting to learn about it. I just haven't had the opportunity to learn from anyone. Mm-hmm. And I haven't found any good resources, books or anything. So.
Right.
Yeah. I've played around with a couple books. Like I got an amazing recipe for bull kelp chutney.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, like the big bull kelp. Yeah, the bull kelp. Yeah, anyways, just dicing that up and then...
Interesting.
Recipe is missing me, but I'm like, there's ginger, garlic, sun-dried tomatoes, and just sort of all that. And then stewed it in with a bit of vinegar and sugar.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just trying to figure out what that texture would be with, like, after all that.
It's kind of it's a chunky.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you got to dice it up. There's a bit of texture to it, but it melts out a little bit, so...
Yeah,
I'm just trying to think of something that it would be.
I've heard about this chutney for years, and I've never tried it.
I know. I've always. It's one of my favorite.
I guess I need to get some bull kelp for
favorite you. Favorite foraging things from when I was working on the maple leaf.
Yeah.
I also did it for the Shellfish Festival one year. So sable fish with a bull kelp chutney on it. It wasn't as nice because it was a bit of a different bull kelp.
Yeah, species. We don't get as much bull kelp down here like the up north and on the west coast. You get those giant mats of it and the giant bulbs of it. The stuff's 30, 40 feet long. But down here, we get some kelp, but it's not the same.
You get some on the far side of Hornby Island.
Yeah, there's a bit over there. But as the inland kind of areas, years ago, there used to be mats of it out there too, but there's not anymore.
I think they've mowed down because it's a bit of a frustrating for boats.
Yeah. Well, I think there was a harvest on it too.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it just got wiped out that way before it was able to seed itself or whatever. Yeah. So.
Wow.
Yeah. But I know where we go salmon fishing, where there was no salmon, there's lots of bull kelp. So we could have eaten that up there.
Next time.
Yeah.
There you go. Way to salvage the trip.
Yeah. What did you eat? We ate mussels and sea asparagus and kelp. Not too bad.
Yeah, no, that's not that bad, actually. I'd totally be into that.
Yep.
Perfect.
I think that we've sort of mined that as far as that's going to go as to what we can forage for right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a few other experts in the valley on foraging, and
I know
it'd be great to have Yarrow Willard in here to talk about it because he's the guy. He knows a lot of this stuff.
Yeah?
And I'm almost just kind of taking stuff I've gleaned from watching his YouTube videos, a lot of what I've learned just by watching Yarrow do his thing. So
yeah, and it should be noted again that this you've never once said that this is even your field of expertise. No. Like, I just sort of was like, hey, maybe we can talk to Blaine about that.
Even if you eat something poisonous, thing. You can sue me if you want. It's not going to get you anywhere because I have no licenses to lose. I'm just a hobbyist. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Blaine. Thanks
you
for
betcha.
Coming in.
Thanks for having me up here.
Good to see you.
Yeah.
You bet.
And we'd like to thank our listeners for tuning in again and checking out the Edible Valley podcast. And definitely we'd love to hear from you. Send your any questions or comments or likes or concerns to us at ediblevalley@gmail.com. And we'd definitely like to thank our sponsors, of course.
We want to thank Butcher's Block and Ivan's Truffles, and we want to thank Atlas Cafe, of course. And if you are interested in anything that we were talking about or want to learn a little bit more, we'll have some links. We'll have some links to some books you can buy through our Amazon program, and check out and find out a little bit more about all this stuff.
And anyone who wants to help support this podcast and keep it going, we'd love to hear from you, and we accept any kind of donations that you feel are acceptable.
Yeah. Great. Well, thanks for listening.
Thanks.